Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Curious Conversations with Tully and Sarah.
We sit down and chat with business owners, entrepreneurs, and some of the best conversation starters.
This is a podcast about real life lessons and people doing cool shit.
Hello.
I have poop sweat.
Happy Wednesday.
Welcome back to an episode of Curious Conversations.
I hope Matt just left that in.
Please, Matt, can you take that out? Welcome back to Curious Conversations. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, Tully Louise.
Hi. So how are you today?
I'm really good. Do you know sometimes where you just have a bit of a pinch me moment? Today I was, before our guest came on for the episode, I was like, how lucky are we to get what we do and speak to the people that we speak to?
I know. We are very lucky. I feel like when we started this podcast, it was kind of like for a little bit of fun. We're like, yeah, we know some really cool people. But as the podcast has evolved, the people that we get access to share their knowledge, their stories with you guys and also with us is pretty phenomenal.
If you told me that we would sit down and talk to someone who sold a business for $2.1 billion and we had access to their mind and how they think, I'll be like, what?
Yeah, us? I know. It's pretty wild. So coming off what Sarah's just spoken about, we had Radic Sally?
Radic Sally.
Yeah, Radic Sally on the podcast, and he, phenomenal story, but he's also just, I'm going to talk about the book because we didn't really speak about it on the podcast, but he has just brought out a book that says How to Build a $1 billion Business on Purpose, for Profit, with Passion. And I started to read it a little bit yesterday and so did Sarah, and we were like, oh my gosh, this book is phenomenal for a business owner. Mm-hmm. It can be very easy to lose your why, lose your passion, get stuck in the day-to-day stuff. And he has a really, which I took out of it, his advice in regards to how do you get back your why, for me, was my favorite part of the podcast.
You might be sitting there thinking, Radic Sally, never heard of him, but I can tell you, you've heard of Swiss Vitamins.
Absolutely.
So Radic was CEO of Swiss Vitamins and took it from a multi-million dollar company to a billion dollar company. So he knows what he's talking about, and just to have someone like that caliber sit down and talk was phenomenal.
It's crazy. And I always get a little bit nervous when we record podcasts with someone like that, but he was so down to earth and so knowledgeable and just very calm. Must be all that meditating. but I absolutely enjoyed the conversation so, so much. And I can't wait to dive into this book. And yeah, I think you guys are really going to love the episode.
When he said that, do we meditate? I was like, in my head, I was like, fuck yeah, I'm on $120.
Yeah, you've done good this year.
120 days of continuous meditation.
Well done. You've done good.
Thank you.
We love that. So we hope you guys love this episode. And like I said, Radic's book is currently available and it is freaking amazing. If you're a business owner, I highly recommend grabbing a copy.
Enjoy the episode.
Ciao.
Radic, welcome to Curious Conversations.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you, ladies, for having me.
You are one of the most successful entrepreneurs in Australia's history, I would say. You have an abundance of money. And my first question is, does society have it wrong? What can't money buy?
I think that the fact is life has its ups and downs in whatever we're doing. And it's perspective that kind of brings an even keel to things. And, well, it can bring an even keel, mm-hmm. or it can kind of get you displaced pretty quickly. So for me, it's really important whenever I kind of have a moment, which those moments feel as intense as when I hadn't got to the very fortunate place I've got to now, financially,
mm-hmm.
it kind of is just reminding myself that this is part of life. Things will go wrong and things will go right. And when we're on the high of right and the kind of the low of when it's going wrong, it's important to remind ourselves that, you know, this is a moment that we should savor in one way or another. Even when we're down and it's kind of a negative feeling, there's something good coming of that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of bringing us and reminding us of what's important in our life and kind of trying to find that center place. And so there's lots of tools and modalities that I kind of played around with along the way to help find that balance, but money hasn't certainly delivered it.
Mm. Yeah. That's a really good question to start off with, Sarah. I like that.
It's something that Tal and I bring up in business. It's what are we motivated by? Like,
mm-hmm.
And some people think money is not a great motivator, but the reality is we all need money.
And this is something Sarah and I, from our business experience, we sat down with Sarah's therapist, who was our business therapist as well. And at the end of last year, I was done with business. I was like, been doing this for 12 years, done. He said, what are you motivated by? And I was like, I was too embarrassed to say money because I thought that was like an ego thing. And I was like, but I know money drives my motivation in some ways. So I think that's what you're kind of trying to explain.
Is it okay to be motivated by money?
I think that it's one component.
Yeah.
And I think that we have a system that makes money the thing that we should aspire
to
achieve. And it works because it's kind of performance management in a way that we get gratitude through cash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what we quickly realize is that our emotions are perhaps a bit deeper than that. Mm-hmm. And our emotions are driven by, you know, financial outcomes, but they're also driven by a whole lot of other things. And so if you deliver that financial outcome, that's switched off, but it doesn't mean all the other things that are driving us suddenly disappear.
Yeah.
And so what I found is when I first got we first did the deal, I rang my wife and I said, you know, we're done, signed all the paperwork, monies are transferred. She goes, what do you want to do? What are you going to do? And I go, can you make chicken soup for us? And let's just go home. And I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Like it was never about the destination. It's always been about the journey.
I love that.
And the kind of the excitement that's created. And, you know, that's the reason we get up is the fun that we're having, the people we're around, the connections, say, you two have or you have with your peers and the people you work with. That's our most important precious asset is our time.
Yeah.
And so when I had the moment of once we'd earned out the business, which was another sort of 16 months later, still leading this business, it was a beast of a thing and it was far too big for me to still be the CEO of it. It had grown beyond me. I stopped. I wasn't healthy.
Oh.
Yeah, so I wasn't, you know, when I listened deeply to myself, I needed purpose. I needed to be doing something that was kind of was giving back to society. Mm. You know, like at Swiss, our reason to be was our culture, for having this amazing workplace that inspired people and inspired the best of them, and that was incredibly fulfilling for me. And is now what drives me every day is kind of how we make our society that little bit better.
Yeah, I want to go back. You've mentioned how the beast of a company you worked for, and I feel like we should go back a little bit if people don't know who you are.
Mm.
Now, before you moved into Swiss, you were at Village Cinemas, right? Mm. So how did the transition between Village Cinemas and then going to Swiss, how did that happen?
So Village was a great apprenticeship and a most amazing apprenticeship. It was sort of 10 years of my life and I worked up from shoveling popcorn to being general manager of Gold Class and Europa and Cinemas. That you know, lesson in business was the best education that I could have ever invested, but I got paid to do it, which is fantastic. And so I was 26, 27 and the Village had had a 30-year-old CEO and he'd gone well for a year or two and then it didn't go that well for him. And so they weren't going to appoint another 30-year-old as the CEO. So it quickly became apparent to me I needed to look sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And so my father being professor of surgery, mum a medical scientist, dad was kind of the first to talk about diet causing disease in the 70s in conventional medical circles. And mum being a medical scientist, she'd read the nutrition of people's blood and kind of help dad prepare the patient for being as healthy as they possibly can be for Western treatment. And so my dad, being a professor, he'd lecture to me on this, and he got laughed at in the 70s when he'd talk about diet, even meditation. He'd look at it and helping. Yeah, it was ridiculous that diet could help people with a heart attack.
Wow.
And so it took 20 years for his work to be published, so in the 90s. Wow. So I grew up with that background of a very frustrated father.
Yeah.
And so he knew about this thing, nutrition, pretty early on, and what it was doing through his research in improving people's health outcomes. And so we had all of these amazing people around us that practice meditation or yoga or you know, were in the nutrition business or vitamins business. And so, you know, one of those people was the managing director of Swiss. His mother had been unwell with some hormone issues, and you know, went and saw my father and dad, improved her situation, and then he became a bit of a mentor to Michael. And so Michael, for a couple of years, had been trying to get me across to Swiss to work with them, and it just wasn't the right time.
Yeah.
And so with that background, that when the timing was right, and you know, when I quickly realized, slowly realized that it wasn't going to be me as the next CEO of Village, at least for the next 10 years, it was probably time for me to look elsewhere. And so, yeah, the next time Michael and I spoke, I moved across to supplements, vitamins, yeah.
Wow. That's a cool story. I like about your parents too.
What was the first thing you did when you became CEO of Swiss?
I think the thing for me was really thinking about the change, you know, what we did really well, and then the changes that we needed to make to scale the organisation. Mm-hmm. So what the organisation had was an amazing base of culture that was set by Michael and Stephen, my two business partners, and they created this organisation. They created a brand too, which, you know, that first 10 million of sales is the hardest.
Mm.
It's creating a business is, you know, that is where you really need to kind of find your niche, find your market, do all that kind of positioning, convince partners to help sell your product, get a consumer base that is interested in you and loyal to you, and then you can hire people and you can start to then multiply. Hardest part. Yeah. So I came in when it was turning 10, 12, 13 million bucks, and so it was perfect timing in that regard for me, because it was kind of stagnating because it needed big company principles to kind of to grow, and because it was very founder-led. Everyone, you know, had to follow what the MD was doing, so Michael, and would wait till he had sign-off. And when you get to a certain size and scale, you need to start having people that are able to make decisions without you in the room that would be very similar to what you would do.
Yeah.
And that's that scary part of, you know, founders letting go or kind of those, you know, letting go from the day-to-day principles of running a business. I kind of saw that we got to have meetings, give people, you know, remits to make decisions. And the other thing we did was that the culture needed to be, so the culture continued to thrive with the organisation, needed to be intrinsic with decision-making. So our values in how we made decisions were kind of intrinsic and alive and well, like the business. So our values were people, principles and passion come before profit. And so any decision, we would kind of come back to those values and make decisions based on those values base. And also we would use language that was very positive and constructive all the time. So then we were able to, you know, lift people up to change and do the extraordinary. So if you think about going to a personal trainer and they say to you, do 10 push-ups, and you get to 3 and they say, you look really tired today, you're not going to make it. Most workplaces are like that. Yeah, and that's this constructive language that we chose to use is, hey guys, we can do this. And this is how we're going to get there. And when something doesn't go right, there's permission to train on it. Like a personal trainer says, hey, you need to adjust this and so forth. There's no sort of, oh, why are you telling me to fix it up? It's actually doing this for good reason to get to a better place. So those were the things we kind of thought about to help scale the business.
Yeah. So going back to one of the initial questions, you just mentioned then that one of the values was people over profit.
Yeah.
You weren't motivated by profit.
Yes, proudly I wasn't. And
and do you think some of the world's leading businesses are motivated by their purpose rather than profit, and that's what makes them so successful?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so profit should be an outcome,
yeah,
not the precursor for why you're doing it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that then you get found out for a lack of authenticity in how you what you're kind of positioning yourself as.
Yeah.
Look, there were times that we would have big discussions about our values, and you know, we'll review our values like our KPIs, key performance indicators, every kind of 3 months, how we're going at a business plan. We'd review how we're going against our culture. And so that, like, you'd have a big conversation about how you're going to make money mm-hmm. with your KPIs. We'd have this bigger conversation about our values and how relevant they are, how people are interpreting them, and are they continuous to guide us to make the right decisions. And there were periods where we made profit even to those other principles that we talk of. Mm. Because we needed to dial up the focus on profitability and sustainability, because if we don't have that, we're not going to be able to do what we're doing and live this life of kind of purpose or creating this great culture and workplace that we all love being part of.
You mentioned the company's why, and I know we struggle sometimes. Well, we know what our why is, but how do you, as a business owner, and if anyone's listening that's got a business, if they forget their why, sometimes you can be so in the business and forget your why. What would your advice be if someone like that forgets it?
Yeah, and I can see how that happens a lot, and it's happened to us a lot too. Yeah. I think it's really important to get out of the day-to-day of your business in a kind of constructive way every sort of 3 to 6 months, where you're not in your workplace that you're always in. You freshen it up and you get free, and you kind of change the thinking to go, hang on, we're out of now. We're habitual as humans. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got words for creatures of habit. We don't like change. And that's why we chose to kind of use constructive language to help people with change and positive language, because it's kind of training people to change. And when you're growing really rapidly, your business is changing very rapidly. And most businesses are changing very rapidly unless they're kind of in that maintenance mode. And so getting out of your kind of cycle that's habitual and pulling back to somewhere, say in nature, taking your shoes off, going for a walk on that grass, and sort of talking about what's important to you outside of the grind starts to help you focus on, you know, bigger strategic conversations. We all experience when we go on a holiday and how fresh we come back.
Oh, yeah. So motivated.
Yeah, so why not trigger those sorts of things in the workplace where you have a little bit of a retreat, some space to think and go come back with a little bit more clarity as a team, more unified.
I love that. Did you guys do that at Swiss?
We did, yeah. So we actively, and to this day, you know, that I live now in Brunswick Heads. The property is large enough now to host team members, so we do retreats there regularly and we break the cycle and we do our kind of strategic reviews, culture reviews, all of that. Offsite.
Love that.
In your book, you mentioned that I think in your reign as CEO, you got to a stage of like burnout, like working really hard.
Big time, yeah.
What was that stage for you, and what was your day to day looking like that got you there?
Yeah, I was traveling kind of 2 to 3 weeks of every month. So that was on a plane locally, internationally. I was working 7 days a week. Whether it was at home on the weekends, I'd be investing at least 6 hours a day just to catch up on emails or communication, setting myself for the week ahead. I had to have that discipline. So I needed to control my circle of influence, and part of that was to kind of not drink for those really stressful times, because we tend to drink a little bit more than we should and then we might not be as sharp as we need to be on the next day. Exercise I regularly, go for walks with my wife every morning. So we'd walk the dogs for a few kilometres and just give her the best hours of my day, which is first thing in the morning, so our relationship could thrive. But, yeah, that didn't mean that I could control all of the crazy.
Yeah.
And so that circle, whilst I was managing myself as best as I could, you know, meditating as well, you know, do you brush your teeth?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you shower or bath every day? Do you meditate?
Yep, I try.
Fantastic. So, you know, this is our most important asset, our mental hygiene. So, you know, just taking that space, whether it's the walk or whether it's kind of powering down for 20 minutes, which is what I do twice a day, you know, alongside a walk or some exercise, whatever you're doing, just clear the mind of that incessant voice in our head that's exhausting us. You know, that making sure we're on our game, because there are so many uncontrollables out there, which is where I got to. You know, it was a massive level of uncontrollables that I managed to get through, and hence why when we did the deal, chicken soup was it. Mm-hmm. And then I had to carry on for another 16 months to get the second tranche, which is still 30% of my total shares earned out. When I stopped, as I said, I stopped and did nothing, and that was burnout. You know, I still suffer effects of if I talk about it in too much detail, I feel myself getting lightheaded.
And your body.
Yeah, it just goes into that kind of mode. And because I'm safe now, it's kind of more like I got through it with all the adrenals, and now that I'm safe, I go, oh, my body goes, okay, now you can release.
Yeah.
Because you hear of all these successful CEOs, business owners, founders, and a lot of their success has to come with a sacrifice.
Mm.
Do you think your health was a sacrifice?
I think how we were so successful, what we did. Yeah, we had this wonderful culture that everyone felt committed to. But every relationship and good relationship, because you know, we've all been in a bad relationship, and you know, when I've broken up with that bad partner, everyone said to me, "You're much better outside of that relationship," and that other person was much better outside that relationship. It's most people's workplace relationships, unfortunately. But we're, you know, in a really good relationship, you're kind of bringing out the best of each other, and you're stepping each other up, and you know, you have your good times, but the challenging times, you come together and you have a bit of a wrestle, and it's a bit clumsy, but you kind of wrestle to get each other to a better place and some kind of an agreement. And then you all have the heads of every area, someone that, you know, might be the lead on finance, someone that might be the lead on marketing. We have the same in our relationship, my wife and I. She's the lead on, you know, interior at the house, whereas I'm kind of the strategic guy of when we're going to do a renovation or something like that. And we don't sort of argue we might have a good conversation about it, but the final decision rests with the leader in that space, just like it is in the workplace. And so this kind of relationship where you're pushing up against each other and looking to get the best of each other as a result of that is the relationship you want in work. And kind of that's healthy. And you've got to pine for that. You've got to get people together and have a kind of a communications plan, is what we call it, that encourages conversations that bring out the best and enable you to get stronger as a result of that.
Yeah. Swiss, I would say, grew quite quickly. I want to ask, are there any key points when you came into Swiss that you think was part of the growth? Like, I know China, you grew quite quickly in China. And I always think of Swiss as like one of the first brands who really used ambassadors.
Mm.
Like, I think of Swiss and I think of ambassadors. What do you think the key of the growth within the company was?
Yeah. So when I first started, I told people I'd work at Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I worked at Village Roadshow where we had new movies every week. It was so exciting.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted to talk to you about what was happening. And then I'd say, you know, I'm working at Swiss. I'd say, what, the embassy? and I'd say, no vitamins. And they'd go, oh, you're going to talk to me about my urinary tract infection or my IBS, my irritable bowel syndrome? Like, we'll move on.
Yeah.
Because that's how all the vitamins were marketed.
Wasn't sexy.
No. And then occasionally someone would say, I take Centrum. And I go, why do you take that? Oh, because Rob DeCastella takes it, who is a famous marathon runner back then. And I'd go to stores and ask them, you know, why do you give so much space to Centrum? It was the biggest seller at the time. And they'd say, oh, that's great. I go, this is the best margin? They go, no, worst margin in the category. It's the point of sale and the marketing. And they had the picture of Rob and the marketing was a bit more aspirational. Still talked to, you know, very basically to what nutrition does. And I kind of looked over the cosmetic space and the perfume space and all these beautiful people lit up and all that. And beauty comes from the inside as well as externally. It's a sort of real opportunity to kind of change it to aspirational. And, you know, who better than successful people talking about how they were successful in the background with their nutrition? And so Ricky Ponting was our first ambassador, and it was, everyone thought it was a bit crazy because it was male-led cricket. Females don't watch that, and really supplements targeted the grocery buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, and that did really well for us. Then I went to Priceline and presented to them on kind of what we're doing. And I said, we've got Ricky Ponting, and knowing that their audience was 90% female, the buyer said to me, who? And I go, we've got a challenge here.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I went home and asked Mum what's her favourite show, and it was Dancing with the Stars. And Sonia Kruger was the host on that. She was so much fun to listen to and watch. And so I called Sonia, managed to get her number, said, you know, we'd love to have you as an ambassador. And it was the number one show on TV at the time. And she said, oh, I'll take Swiss. Yeah, let's do a deal. Oh, so wow. We did a great deal. But what the no company at that point had ever advertised with the star of a lifestyle program in the program. And so we're kind of responsible for what happens now in the block where every contestant is in the app and product placement and all the kind of ads that come with all the personalities. So that was the first time a lifestyle personality actually did like an influencer deal. So you're right. That kind of then carried on to over 300 different ambassadors at Swiss. So we were relentless about it. And it was kind of, you know, it was the antithesis of what is now an influencer strategy. And that created China for us. So we launched in the US. It was a massive failure. I should have been fired. Probably should have been fired five times over when I worked at Swiss.
With the US market, why the US market first?
Yeah.
Just because it's a beast.
It's very competitive too, yeah.
Everyone, when they want to expand, they're like, US is the number one idea people go to.
Yeah, correct. And so you think that you share a lot of things culturally and it makes sense for us to move into that market. And we were sort of shopping around the world because we're becoming the number one brand. We'd become the number one brand in Australia. We'd just come off being broadcast partners of the Olympics and the Olympic partners of our national team. So we had the rings on our product, you know, the choice of the Australian Olympic team. Wow. So we were flying and, you know, we kind of were going into skincare and then into sports nutrition. We're thinking about organic foods because we knew we'd be number one in supplements. We needed to find new markets. So, and at the same time, we went to China and the partner that we eventually bought us, we were talking to them 5 years before they bought us.
Wow.
And at that time, it wasn't the right time for them to partner with us. Whereas the US, we're going to trade shows and we're talking about what we were doing. We all of a sudden had Rite Aid, Walgreens, CVS, 30,000 stores say to us, we want to range you. We're going to put you on shelves. We'll pay us a little bit extra. We'll do the merchandising for you.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 16, 17 million in orders that we went, we can't walk away from this.
Yeah.
We probably thought we were better than what we was. We needed to really think about it and how much that was really going to cost. We were talking to Nicole Kidman at that time as well, so it made sense to use that money that we were getting from the orders in the US to fund a partnership with Nicole. And then we went a step further and decided to sponsor the Ellen DeGeneres show.
Oh.
And we brought Ellen to Australia with Nicole and the whole audience to Australia. And we shot a season of the show here in Australia. And so that all went to air in January, but our product didn't go on shelf till February.
Ooh,
so,
okay. Yeah.
And then when that merchandising deal that I told you that they were going to do for us, when I walk into store, there'll be one product on the bottom of the shelf. And I just knew we were gone. And so I knew we had about 12 months before we would be thrown out of there. But we really had no chance. And so thankfully, because we brought Ellen and Nicole to Australia and we had the Olympic broadcast partnership, we're looking through our numbers and there are areas where we're selling 10 times more product than in other areas. And these were Chinese populated areas through migrants, through
in Australia.
Yeah, in Australia, university students, tourists, and they were just buying our product off the shelf. And so this what became the genesis of Project Gold. And it was the first of the Daigou trade, which is kind of the re-traders overseas. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they got so excited by our brand is because we had all of these, you know, the local person doesn't know in China who Nicole Kidman is or Ellen DeGeneres. The Olympics, yes, and the rings. But the influencers do, in China. So all the people that are successful there in the showbiz element or sporting element would try our product. And now the reason why we marketed so hard is because we had 70% retention, which is massive. So we knew when people would try our product, they would stick with it, feel the difference, and they'd stick with it. So all we needed to do is get it into people's hands. So when these influencers tried the product compared to the others, they're like, wow, and they would tweet about it, whatever, WeChat about it. And so suddenly we had 130,000 resellers of our products.
Wow.
And yeah, so we were marketing to these Chinese resellers in Australia with Mandarin point of sale in these stores in these areas. And yeah, we then became the biggest selling product in Alibaba globally. So of every product, any product sold in. And then we suddenly became the biggest natural health company in China. and crazy. We're foreign owned here from Australia.
Okay, welcome back to Chemist Warehouse Picks of the Week.
Woo woo, my favorite time.
I know, it's when we share all our favorite goodies from Chemist Warehouse. So today we have a couple of products here from Thursday Plantation. Now, this product here is a tea tree medicated gel for acne. So basically it is antibacterial and you just pop it on your, to your skin. Antibacterial and it helps penetrate deep into the skin for any acne prone skin.
That's a tea tree oil. I've got a eucalyptus oil and these are 100% pure, used from Australian oils. Mm-hmm. And you use eucalyptus oil for coughs, colds, flu, muscle aches, cleaning products.
Mm-hmm.
It's winter coming up, guys. So
yeah, if you want to winterproof your house and yourself, that is a really good product to get. And also the tea tree medicated gel for acne, all available from Chemist Warehouse. I have to tell you a funny story. So we manufacture in China and I remember getting off the train one day and I was with, not you, I was with the Flick, another girl that used to work for us. I was getting off the train and I saw these people with like bags of like things. One was either baby formula and there was another bag of like vitamins and they were all being sneaky, like paying. And I was like, we were stuck there for ages and I'm staring at these people. I'm like, are they doing drug deals? I'm like, I was so confused. Standing there for ages waiting for my ride. I was like, they kept coming off the train, giving them back. It was all Swiss vitamins.
Yeah.
Because they used to get exactly, what do they call the
Dagos and like the Hong, they used to go across the border to Hong Kong, buy them, and bring it or get
Australian. I was like, this is so wild. I literally thought they were doing drug deals.
Yeah.
What was the number one selling SKU at Swiss?
It was a great, good question. It was, there was two that kind of neck and neck. And, you know, Ultivite was in Australia, our multivitamin. But in China, it was cranberry. So we were moving 15 tons of cranberry a month.
Like,
it was
cranberry?
Bonkers. We were the biggest buyers of cranberry in the world. But also just as an antioxidant because of the pollutants in the water. So for your system to kind of cleanse the system, flush, exactly. And then the other one was liver detox, which I actually formulated off the back of the spring carnival for myself because that sort of 4 days, it was like four weddings in a row and just relentless march of socializing and trying to keep on your game while you have a drink in your hand to, you know, smile along with everyone. So I formulated this liver detox to get through spring carnival. And so, yeah, they would buy it and they would sort of break it in half and put it into their whiskey and drink it alongside it to kind of detoxify.
That's smart. What do they say? Retox before you detox. Yeah. Correct. Detox before you retox.
Absolutely. That is really clever. Yeah. That is so crazy.
You're in the world of health. You're still in the world of health. But where do you think the next billion-dollar company will come from? What industry?
Yeah. So I think that there's opportunity for every industry to create a billion-dollar business as long as it's got a real purpose, yeah? And this is where I go back to the reason for why you're being what you be. And so, you know, I need to be careful of pretending I can conquer the world in every area. Mm. I need to understand what I do really well and do more of that. And so, and that's what my tip is to anyone thinking about wanting to become, you know, successful in whatever they do. It's kind of just reminding yourself of practice what you're good at and get better at that than the average person. Mm-hmm. And this kind of choosing to be professional at what we do is kind of what was the secret at Swiss, and it's been the secret of my success ongoing, is that, you know, if you're a 100-meter runner, you train for that and you sacrifice and you become the best in the world at that because of all the things you need to do to have that happen. And it's the same with anything, you know, music, you know, ultra talented individuals at singing, whatever. And why not with our work? Mm. We've got to make that choice to be elite.
Yeah.
And elite at what we do. And unless we make that choice, you're not going to be a billion-dollar business or be even successful in what you do. Why waste your waking hours? Turn up, give your best, and be professional because, you know, this is – you know, I never talk about work-life balance. I talk about work-life integration. You should come to work and love work, and whenever it kind of is giving you an itch outside of work, stressing you out, you know, just remember whatever it is in life, if you're not working or you are working, something will stress you out. That's true. You're better off being stressed out about something that actually means something and is creating outcomes for you. So that's my kind of thing. So the next billion-dollar industry will be driven by someone who is, you know, better at what they can do more than most and driven by purpose.
Yeah. I want to talk about the next thing as well for you. You are now part of Wonderlust.
Mm.
So can you explain to everyone what Wonderlust is? Because it's the products and then you've got events.
Yeah.
Funny, can I just, sorry for interrupting. Yeah. I was brushing my teeth this morning and I looked over and I was like, Ginkgo. Wonderlust.
Thank you.
Brain health. I'm all over my brain health.
You're on the right stuff for that then. So what have you got, the liquid or the capsule form?
The liquid.
The liquid's great because it's more rapidly absorbed.
I can't use it at the moment, can I, because I'm pregnant. I've kind of gone off vitamins.
The one you do is the omega-3s and the plant-based omega-3s because it's great for brain health.
Okay.
So, but yeah, you want to be careful what you're taking when you're
pregnant. Super careful, and I'm like, once she's out, I can't wait to go back.
Yeah,
to,
you'll need it for breastfeeding and for the body to
energy
heal,
and
correct all those
hormones.
So Wonderlust is I thought it was just liquid form of vitamins and supplements, but there's obviously powders and capsules as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's all plant based.
Yep.
And so to me, it's kind of Swiss 2.0. It's coming back to the category with a bigger, broader answer because there's so many already fish oils out there. And so if we're doing a fish oil, we're doing a plant-based one. And that plant-based one, when you're growing the algae, it carbon abates. So it's really great for the planet. And then you're also not starving the ocean of fish.
Yeah.
Really, if we're fishing fish, we should eat it, not supplement it.
Yep.
And so having that as a plant-based option is just a great alternate and a much better story. And it's what the fish eat to create the omega-3 in their bodies. So it's the healthiest form and it doesn't carry pollutants as a result because it's very small in molecule, whereas, you know, a swordfish, as we know, we're told to only eat once a week maximum because of the amount of mercury it will carry. So you've got this entity that, of nutrition that's healthier for the planet, healthier for the individual. I could say the same about all nutrition. You know, most B vitamins are synthesized. They're quite pollutant in the way they're kind of made. And then there's all these binders that go into the tablets. So the liquid is the most purest form, doesn't have any binders in there. And then your capsules, same thing. We use a veggie cap. And you'd also, in fish oil, would you expect that to be what the capsule would be? What would you think would be the capsule?
Of a fish oil?
Yeah, so what should it be made of?
I've never thought of it.
It's
actually bovine. So most pescatarians would be like, what am I doing? I'm having three serves of beef every day.
Really?
Well, not three serves of beef, but I'm eating beef every day as a result of ingesting
those
capsules.
I never thought of that actually.
So yeah, ours is a veggie cap. So again, you can kind of, so it's all plant-based and what you think is natural health, you always think is natural, not synthesized. Everything is a herbal product. So and then what I discovered further is one of the oldest kind of lifestyle spiritual health remedies is Ayurvedic medicine, where, you know, you've got herbals and nutrition, then you've got movement through yoga, and so that movement helps with our body and kind of our fitness levels, and then you have a shavasana or meditation at the end. And these are just three tools that are so important for this modern age and helping balance us. So we have the supplements, the plant-based supplements, but then we also have these events where people get to kind of hear inspiring stories, so lift their spirits on how people have been successful through to experiencing meditation with a mass group, like a mass meditation. There's nothing better. Or experience yoga with a big group of people too, and that's a wonderful experience. All sorts of wellness things we put together at these festivals to kind of help us be at our best.
You've been to a Wonderlust with me before.
Yep, I have. We did yoga in St Kilda.
Yes,
I remember.
Yeah. I remember that one. Yeah,
we did.
Back 2019, is that right?
It would have been a while before COVID, definitely.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
I remember Nikki Disco Yoga did a
Yeah, she did too.
Awesome.
She did too.
How fun.
With Wonderlust, how long's it been going?
Well, Wonderlust started back in back just after 2001, but it sort of formulated. It was a yoga studio, and then it became the events business about 2008, 2009.
So was the studio in LA?
It was in New York, and there was a studio in LA. Definitely, there was a Wanderlust studio there.
Yeah, like on La Cienega or something. I remember.
Correct. It was an awesome spot.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, I saw Russell Brand interview Marianne Williamson there. It was a great little event. It kind of started then, and it was just a big event, you know, the biggest yoga and music event festival in the world. They had 60 type events in that space. And so, you know, COVID slowed that down, and then the events never made, you know, significant amounts of money. Mm-hmm. So the products really made sense as a kind of connection, but as a way to make it financially sustainable. And then we also have this digital offering called Commune, which is like a Netflix for wellness, and it has people like Wim Hof on there, Marianne Williamson, Russell Brand, Deepak Chopra, Mark Hyman and Zach Bush, all these amazing health professionals doing courses on there in how we can bring our best selves. So, again, you've got the festival, which kind of, you know, brings it to life in practice and connection, because we, you know, something about that amazing feeling when we all get together en masse, and that's deeply moving. Then we've got our nutrition with the products to help people get through their day to day and optimize their health, and then we've got this video program that enables people to keep on their path of their true north.
Yeah. Which is,
Out of the Wanderlust range, what are you using religiously every day?
Oh, it's a long list, but
is it?
I love a dandelion and the milk thistle, which is kind of the new version of the liver detox. Those two for detoxing. I have a ginkgo during the week. On weekends, I give it a rest, and then I have my omega-3. A plant-based omega-3. We've got a men's formula as well, which is a nice balance of herbs that men require. There's a women's tonic as well. And so they're probably the key ones, with a little bit of vitamin C and some magnesium.
Yeah. How do you think of what product is next in the health industry? Are you looking at trends already of what's happening in men's and women's health for the next product?
Yeah. So you kind of, there's all of these products have been around for a long time, they trend at various times. Like ashwagandha, which is our biggest selling product, which is a great stress relief product, which I take regularly too. That one there, we did it at Swiss back in 2008. It failed. It's in the multivitamin, and I think it still is, but not in a therapeutic dose when you get it in a single herb. And now it's our biggest selling herbal ingredient. But a product that we've just released came from an inspiration where I heard Huberman talking with a fellow called David Sinclair, who kind of did all the research around fasting and glucose and sugar balancing. And so I was taking berberine a little while ago to kind of help me balance my glucose levels, and then I go, oh, hang on. Huberman and David talked about this kind of package of how to, you know, live your longest, and there was there's resveratrol, cinnamon, and berberine. So we just released all of those, and berberine not only balances your sugar, but it's like a natural Ozempic, and it kind of helps with dietary fat, and you know, I've had countless people tell me how much weight they've lost since taking the product, even since we've only released it over 2 months ago.
Yeah, so I keep
having a moment.
Barbara, I keep seeing that on TikTok that's the natural
Ozempic. Right, 82 million views. So we've got now the first product in Australia that's available off shelves. It's rocket shipping. It's an amazing.
We travel product to the States a lot, and we find that some of our friends, especially based in LA, are always ahead of us in regards to like supplements and stuff. Like what were you saying? Colostrum?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. And colostrum's been around for quite a while. It's in Ethical Nutrients probiotic. So it's a really good product. Yeah. And you know, Adelaide was using a football club for performance about 10 years ago, and they had some really great results.
I think what Radek's saying, like all these things are around. It's just whether I might start taking one and they'll be like to Radek, hey, I'm taking this. NMD, really loving it, getting great results.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it's a ripple effect.
Word of mouth.
Like we had a biohacker on last week And he was saying, I said, what's next in the health industry in his world? And he said that there's a new product coming out. Well, they've extracted a compound out of caffeine, which gives you the same neurological boost and energy boost, but without affecting your cortisol and your nervous system.
Interesting.
And so he's like, in my world, that's the biggest thing. But in my world, I'm like, hey, can someone bring out a pine needle tea? Mm. I want things like that.
Yeah.
It's how can you – everything's always been around. Yeah, like pine needles have been around forever. Yeah. It's just correct. Like –
same with caffeine and guarana. Yeah. All those sorts of extracts.
And like for us and what's on social media at the moment is CMOS.
Oh, yeah.
Like CMOS is huge. And I remember I was in the Caribbean a couple of years ago and this guy was collecting CMOS. I mean, what's that? And he goes, oh, it's so good for your wellness. And I'm like, okay, really? And then, yeah, now locally you can get it now, but I remember Air One had it a couple of years ago. How good is Air One?
Probably like $300. Best health food shop
in the world. Yeah. Ridiculously expensive, but great wellness shopping and a great place to get inspiration for new products. And you're right, US does lead the trends. And I just got back last week from LA and there's the biggest trade show in the world for natural products.
Yep.
The thing about the US, they have less regulation. Mm. There's less control over the claims they can make or the way they make it as well. And so we do get things a little later, but what you can be assured of, what we get is a high-quality product. Yeah. It's pharmaceutical grade. It's manufactured in a pharmaceutical grade facility as well. So your end product is tested. You know what's in the product. You're going to get a delivery that's consistent with what's in the label, whereas it's a food standard over in the US. So it's a lot freer. You'll be sued if you do the wrong thing, but they wait for the reaction rather than proactively have regulation that stop things from, you know, not being done correctly.
Yeah. How do you choose, say, you love, for me, CMOS.
Mm.
You run a health and wellness company. How do you not just go to your production team, hey, we're going to find some CMOS and roll it out?
Yeah. Well, CMOS is a hard one because it's got to be refrigerated in most forms, although a sort of gummy form.
Oh, really?
That I bought from Air One. Yeah. So that obviously can be transferred. But, again, you don't know how much actual nutrition is left in that because the standards there are different.
Yeah.
And so and I don't think it's been registered as a therapeutic product, so it could be sold as a food in any format.
Oh.
But then how much nutrition is left in it, we don't know. Uh-huh. So that work would need to be done before we'd release it in Australia because it is a novel ingredient.
So it's like how do you design product? Do you design products for what you want or what people want?
I think it's a bit of both. Mm. I think that you're hoping, like the liver detox one that I explained, that became the biggest seller at Swiss, and that was for me at the time.
Yeah.
But I felt like that was a need that a lot of people would connect with. So there's a balance of that. So that's design thinking, you would say. You're kind of thinking about, what are things that would apply to me but also others? But then you're also looking at trends and numbers, and then you're just looking at space. And, you know, I get to Europe, US probably twice a year, and I'll go visit retailers regularly. I'll ask some questions. I'll ask consumers questions about why they're purchasing a product or so forth. And I take a lot of photos. And then I go to trade shows too and just walk the floor and see what's trending. Caffeine was trending at the Anaheim show, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask what else was trending there. I wanted to go to that trade show for so long.
Yeah, it's an amazing trade show. And it has changed a bit because it is a trade show for retailers.
Yeah.
And so a lot of selling now online exclusively. So they don't have as many, I'd say, supplement companies as they did in the past. Mm-hmm. But the food offerings are ridiculous. The cosmetics offering are amazing too. So, it's, you know, caffeine trending. It was more of a blend this time. There's a lot of the kind of plant-based stuff coming through now, which I think people are seeing that there are, you know, that our supplements aren't as pure as what we thought. So, you know, this kind of movement to whole foods and kind of organic and plant-based products is omnipresent.
Yeah. Mm. Do you guys take – Sarah and I, we go to the Chinese doctor once a week to get acupuncture and sometimes they give us herbs.
Yeah.
Do you guys take inspiration from the Chinese medicine?
Mm.
Eastern
Ayurvedic medicine was what is the basis of Chinese medicine.
Okay.
So they're the same, one and the same, yeah.
I didn't know they were the same, okay.
Well, not exactly the same, but they're one and the same. Okay. So they're borrowed from each other.
Yeah.
Ayurveda was first and then the Chinese traded with India and that was one of the trades sharing that they did. Okay. And so there are Indian forms of acupuncture as well. But, this is long dated back. And yep. So they are an amalgam of similar.
Yeah. And talking on home soil, what about Aboriginal plants? And yes. I know like Aboriginal medicine. What do you take inspiration from plants?
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, I spend half my time in community doing community work.
I love that.
The inspiration I get from community workers. They are the greatest entrepreneurs, yep. social entrepreneurs doing outstanding stuff. And so, I've been very lucky to spend a lot of time with First Nations people. I get on country a couple times a year. And one thing I've learned, that we've got some amazing ingredients out there, plant-based products. Mm-hmm. But part of, Aboriginal thinking is that if you take a herb or a plant from the land, it needs to have ceremony go with it.
Oh.
And so it won't work the way it traditionally has worked unless you do the ceremony that has to go with the process of making that product.
Oh, I didn't get it.
So,
Power of prayer,
it makes sense. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So this is like over 60,000 years of technology that we don't understand.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I don't know if we're quite ready to be given that with where we're at with our kind of reconciliation two cultures. Yeah. So, things like kakadu plum have very high levels of vitamin C. Same with the Davidson plum, has amazing levels of antioxidants. There's lemon myrtle, which is very relaxing, like a lavender tea or a chamomile. Mm. And then you've got other things like finger limes, which are high in vitamin C's and all sorts of other nutrition that is familiar to citruses.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
What motivates you now with business?
I think that we are in a position where we have an amazing society where Australia, we're very lucky to live here.
Yeah, we're very lucky.
We have... Any opportunity we really want to go for, you mm-hmm. can most people in some shape or form. And hopefully, there is obviously still a chunk of disadvantaged people where that's incredibly difficult for, but you still hear of like our Prime Minister. He came from a disadvantaged family and now is the Prime Minister of this country. So, and not many countries can say that.
Mm.
And so we live in this incredible balance of democracy and capitalism. And so we've got to maintain that and make it better, not tear mm-hmm. it apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so the alternate is an autocratic capitalist society, and I don't want to be in that society. And so, we as business leaders, 4 out of 5 of us work in businesses, 1 out of 5 work in government. So it's really up to us the state of our society. And so this is why I go back to culture. It not only is so important in helping you create purpose in your business and success,
mm-hmm.
but also for society. If people are happier at work, mm-hmm. how much happier is our society?
That is so true.
Yeah.
It's up to us to kind of set that standard and own the responsibility as business leaders to give back to society by creating purpose, creating great cultures. And, the most rewarding, fulfilling thing for me was never the financial outcomes, but when a husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend would come to me and say, my partner's so much a better person as a result of working Aww. With your organisation. And that to me is, you're doing something pretty special.
Well, that's beautiful.
You want people to enjoy going to work.
Absolutely.
They should.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be always like up and high and all of that sort of thing. But you got to understand that it's your responsibility as a leader to make sure that you're giving back as much as you're getting.
Mm.
And people are growing as a result of that friction I talk about.
How did you make sure that Swiss had that culture?
This is this thing about regularly reviewing and making sure you are talking about the KPIs of the business financially, but the culture of the business is regularly. And, there'd be times when that was hard. We would have all these benefits that we would give to team members, like, a day off every month when there wasn't a day off. And we just gave that to everyone. And we thought that was a good way to stop sickies because then you got your day off to get the plumber in or whatever you had to do and you knew you had that coming. But then, we didn't found it did anything. There's still sort of no performance change. But then when we changed that into, okay, you have to earn that day off and it was performance related and it forced a conversation around, am I going to earn my day off?
Yeah.
It was, you know, there was gratitude for it.
Yeah.
Or we would have a day, you know, we would offer lunch and breakfast as a team and all those things. And, you know, again, when things weren't going that well, we'd have gratitude week. We'd switch off all these things that we would have in our culture as part of what we did to remind people that, hey, this is what it's like to work in your average organization.
Yeah.
Do you want to go back to that, or are we going to work hard to, you know, to be rewarded like we are?
We've
got to do that as humans. We kind of need to be reminded of, you know, how we've got to be accountable and bring our best.
Mm. Gratitude's so important. I've got the last question. I don't know if you've got any other questions, but I just want to finish on these. What are your daily negotiables? You say you meditate and do yoga and stuff. Mm. What would be your daily negotiables to be the best version of yourself?
Yeah. So, it's to meditate twice a day, which, you know, you got to find a meditation you love and look forward to. You're doing the wrong meditation if you don't get into the kind of habit of it. Find something that works for you. I work out four times a week, and that's a non-negotiable, at least twice a week. But, you know, four times is my aspirational point. And then I'll have yoga twice a week, and then I'll paddleboard at least once a week.
Beautiful.
Which is my new board meeting, you know, you go a paddleboard. So that works for me. But, you know, when I was working intensively, like I still work very hard, but I've got more flexibility around my hours. But when it was very structured, I needed to be in the office from 7 till 7 every day. It would be a workout walk like I talk about, or ride my bike into work, plenty of movement, and then have meetings where I'd walk with people and I'd meditate in a visual place at work so everyone could see that that was an important part of kind of what I did, and we should all take time out in the day, and that's okay to do.
Yeah, you're an amazing role model and leader, and thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies, for having me on. It's been fantastic chatting with you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed that so much.
Yeah.
And I keep looking at your T-shirt, work hard and be nice. So if anyone's going to take anything today, work hard and be nice.
Very true.
Yeah, thank you so much. Oh,
thank you.
It's us again. We're back. It's Tully and Sarah. And if you don't know, we have an activewear brand called Tully Lou.
And we have Australia's favourite leggings. But not only do we have leggings, we've got hoodies, we've got outerwear.
We've got everything that you may need for an active lifestyle. So we want to give you guys an offer if you've never shopped at Tully Lou, or if you've shopped at Tully Lou
and you just want $15 off your next order,
you need to take this offer,
and it's TL Cherry, all caps, all one word, and pop that in at checkout and you will get $15 off.
So head to our website, it's www.tullyloo.com, or head to our Instagram, stalk our page, use the code, and let's get you all in some TL.
And welcome to the family.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.